it's a result of having ignored the fact that we are not enabling, nurturing, incentivizing women in middle management and preventing them to drop off as you know they face societal, official and familial crises one after the other.
Hello and welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, and businesses, and of course, professionals, who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. They allow principles to take precedence over ad hocism. For them, profitability is as important as scale, creating and leading new categories and innovations. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, agonies and ecstasies, and of course, the little joys of their jobs and lives. It's as much about the personal life stories as about the entrepreneurial and professional journeys. Unusual Suspect streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms. For this episode, I'm delighted to have Nagma Mulla, CEO, Edelgive Foundation. Stree Leads is the flagship initiative of Edelgive Foundation, philanthropic asset manager dedicated to supporting the growth of small to mid-sized NGOs committed to empowering women, children, and other vulnerable communities. With a focus on promoting women's advancement into leadership roles within India's private sector, Stree Leads aims to showcase the significant impact women create in such positions and accelerate their progression by identifying and amplifying pathways to their leadership. Through the engagement pillars of platform building, mentorship initiatives, and knowledge dissemination conducted in collaboration with government bodies, industry associations, and corporations, Edelgive Foundation aims to create an ecosystem that promotes women to leadership positions while nurturing their growth and development. Welcome to Unusual Suspects, Nagma. Delighted to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Gaurav. I'm very excited to have this conversation with you. Thank you for having me.
Nagma, just to start off with a very basic question, you know, just to put things in context and also in perspective, how underrepresented are women in the corporate workforce and leadership? And how are women placed in different sectors, for instance, Nagma?
Thank you so much for this very important question. So as on today, women across workforce in India are only 27%, which is an increase from 2016, where it was just 24%. So that's how poor it is. Even in different sectors, if you look at the development sector, we do have a high proportion of 47% women who are in senior positions. But then we go into looking at CEOs, for example, across the listed companies, only 100 CEOs out of 2,000 are women. Out of them, you know, 54% are just representing the financial services. So that's how poorly they are from the other sectors. Only 11% of Indian companies overall have women who are CEOs or are in top leadership positions. So overall, it looks quite abysmal, really, when you look at it.
Absolutely. And, you know, just to, you know, the logical corollary to that question is, why is representation of women low in the workforce and leadership? And why do you think there's a marked imbalance in the gender composition of the workforce and leadership roles? And, you know, what factors can be attributed for this, Nagma?
So, Gaurav, you know, I'd use the analogy that you sow what you reap, right? You know, or you reap what you sow. If we do not invest in the journey of women as they rise in the ranks within corporate leadership or, you know, within corporate structures, how will we arrive at a point where we have great options to choose from when we're choosing CEOs? The broken rung, the fact that women, you know, they at entry point are actually quite high as a percentage when they're hired, but at different levels as they rise, the reduction of women from workforce is fairly structural and systematic. When they get married, when they have children, and then particularly to India, when there are children in, you know, given their 10 standard exams or their 12 standard exams or any professional entry exams, women keep dropping off. And finally, we have this really small group from which to choose from. How are we going to have more women to choose from when we are choosing CEO roles? So that's really, like, you know, it's a result of having ignored the fact that we are not enabling, nurturing, incentivizing women in middle management and preventing them to drop off as, you know, they face societal, official and familial crises one after the other.
You know, despite lagging in gender balance within leadership, the finance and economic sector seems to be an outlier, because on a relative scale, it does employ a fair degree of women, and also encouraging and promoting women in the workforce and leadership positions. Now, having said that, beyond a certain point, beyond the headline numbers and the beyond the headline faces that we often see in the media, there seems to be very limited number of women in leadership position within the, you know, within the finance and economic sector. Is there an element of bias here, Nagma?
There is an element of unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. There is an element of conscious bias. There are structural issues here. Having men being chosen over them during promotions, you know, not being selected for key roles because they are women, you know, not aggressive enough, not vocal enough, sometimes too aggressive for the roles that they're chosen of. There is an assumption that women will service the roles like HR and admin better than they would ever do sales. So there's a lot that of baggage that our current, corporate structures do carry that ensure that women don't get those meteor opportunities and roles. The other side of this coin is that there is so much that women also need to be more vocal when they see these biases act up. I think as a woman myself, and having done that myself also, I can tell you that many times we do not call out the biases because we are outnumbered. Mm. We do find it, out of line, out of place, sometimes out of context to voice the fact that, you know, we've not been given a fair opportunity because of our gender. There's also this the playing the woman card. So there are unconscious biases that are structural. There are also inhibitions that women now carry, which are not invalid, which are real for, all of us, and that do become impediments. So there's both of these things happening together.
There's a sociological trend also happening, and we do see a shift in employment trends, particularly in the formal sector, and which it seems to be an encouraging trend. And if these are the green shoots, probably these are encouraging green shoots, is the surge of participation of women in the formal sector. But that said, here is the problem. This is not translating into equitable leadership representation. Why is that, Nagma?
It is not transferring into, again, because when it comes to being a deputy, when it comes to being even a senior, she has made it to a certain point. But most of the times, when the time comes to choose the CEO or, the alpha performer of the organization, men are chosen over women. Mm-hmm. And there is that bias that is carried. And you see that play out again and again in many institutions across. How many women do we have leading financial institutions today? You know, at one point, there were only women who were leading it. But now we don't see female leadership for, you know, the next 5, 6, 10 years. I don't see any sight of a woman leader who's being nurtured. Mm-hmm. The fact is we have to groom and nurture leadership, male or female, for these kind of critical roles. And that nurturing, I think, needs to purposefully include women up there.
How can we overcome such preconceived prejudices, if I may say so?
I feel that the single, the biggest factor that will play out if we want to change is the willingness of the CEO. Leadership has to be very, very focused on ensuring that women are nurtured and groomed to become senior leaders and may take over their positions later. This has to be purposeful. This has to be intentional, and this has to be consistent. Because no matter what, if it is the goal of the CEO or if it is the vision of the CEO, the organization aligns itself to it. So the single most defining factor really is the intention of the top leader to have this, you know, as a part of the culture and as a part of purposeful grooming of leaders that are there in the sector. Everything else starts falling in line then.
Absolutely. No, it's very well said, because eventually it boils down to the leader and how the leader actually, you know, demonstrates the intent of the organization and also embeds into the culture, not just the human resource culture, but otherwise also. Having said that, you know, there's a lot of talk around diversity for all the right reasons, though. And that said, however, there are also a lot of misconceptions around diversity. We see a lot of affirmative actions involving women at various workplaces. But sometimes, do you think that affirmative actions for women are sometimes seen as special concessions? I ask you this question because it could be a little unpopular. But the thing is here, the other aspect of the diversity is also that if these are seen as special concessions, then it kind of perpetuates the belief that women lack the rigor for the top job. Why should gender influence the assessment of competence? Because gender is completely irrelevant when you're assessing competence, isn't it, Nagma?
100%. I absolutely agree with you. Gender should not be a factor. Mm-hmm. It should not be a factor of my competence. It should not be a factor of your competence. You know, we are individuals who show up to do a job, and we should be evaluated for our caliber and how we perform our designated duties. Mm-hmm. Having said that, the whole stigma, and I use this word very carefully, around diversity, inclusion, and equity, the creation of this important nucleus in any organization is well intended, and if done well, this can unleash the magic that we want in terms of having an equitable ecosystem. The fact is, they become token words. They become words that are used to, make the headlines, to put the numbers. We have X percentage of this population in our workforce. We have X percentage of this age in our workforce. And they use those medals. I think diversity, inclusion, and equity, shines through at very important occasions. One is where there are disagreements. Two is when purposeful bias or purposeful facilitation for a segment of the workforce is done. And third is when it is shown in practice and not simply in words. Mm-hmm. When you inculcate that as in these three ways, then it becomes part of the DNA it is followed. But most importantly, more important than all of this, is doing it consistently over a large period of time.
Right.
Not for 1 year, not for 2 years. The benefits of having a diverse, equitable, and inclusive workforce too isolated.
Yeah.
We need to make this normal, and we need to speak to men and have men and women speak to each other about this.
Absolutely. And also, just adding on to that question, doesn't the diversity tag sometimes work against the professional interests of women? I ask you this question because, these can remain in colleagues, in the minds of colleagues and superiors, casting doubts on women's abilities. And that is unfortunate, isn't it, Nagma?
It is. I've gone through it myself. Most of my peers in, CXO positions have gone through it themselves, where they show up, very eager, very hardworking, but because they are a woman, they will be looked at, spoken about, pegged in a certain way. For example, when initially, the mandate of having, a woman on board was, on the board of a company was introduced, I know for a fact how many of my peers, suffered through that whole initial phase of being known as that token woman candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened as a result of it was intense, marginalization in boardrooms, if I may use that word,
mm-hmm.
Because it was done without a conversation. I personally love the fact that mandate was introduced, because we do have more benefits out of it than otherwise. But the thing is, only policy or only a mandate will go as far as bringing someone in and giving them a seat at the table. But the impact of something like this works out when there are conversations, difficult conversations that are encouraged. Men and women are brought together in the same room, context is set, and an inclusive environment is created. in the absence of this, what you just said is exactly what happens, that the entire action, even as if it's targeted to enable a woman, actually marginalizes her in an ecosystem.
Interesting you say that, because there are also explicit and hidden biases against women, and one of them is of course women are expected to, for some reason, develop or adhere to what I call as men-like leadership traits, and they're assessed on the basis of certain styles or traits of men leaders, to be assessed as on the capability of the leadership. How prevalent are these, and how can we overcome these, Nagma?
You know, they were much more prevalent. I think some of the younger women leaders are showing a fantastic way ahead, demonstrating how, femininity is not a weakness, and we can be feminine and assertive leaders as CEOs and CXOs. But yes, what you're saying is right. We do find a lot of senior women have to dress, behave, speak, act like a man. There are so many, proverbs and anecdotes which talk about, to be in the room of a man, you have to be the man's man. Mm-hmm. And that is something that has brought a lot of women forward so far, because it takes, whatever works to get yourself included in the so-called boys club, like we like to call it.
Correct.
But some women, like, for example, Radhika Gupta, comfortable in her femininity, expressing herself. She's not the only one. There's a nice, refreshing group of young CEOs who is wearing their femininity on their sleeve and is assertive and is a performing CEO. And it's showing how younger women can lead, can follow them into being who they are and also owning power.
That brings me to another important question, which it's a sociological one, which is very, very relevant to India, perhaps also in many ways unique to India, is the time that women are expected to spend at home, or rather doing what is called as domestic work or domestic service. And that is that's unpaid work for the household members. Good thing is that, according to government's own survey, as of 2019, the average time Indian women were spending on unpaid domestic service for the household members was three times of men, but it has actually progressively come down over a period of, say, a couple of decades. But that said, it's a very, very high prevalence on a relative scale with men. The other unfortunate part is that families view women's career as a means of meaningful engagement, but when it clashes with domestic responsibilities, their careers often take a backseat. So if it's a trade-off between domestic responsibilities and women's careers, regardless of how progressive or educated our family could be, it's often the case, unfortunately, that it's the women in our families that whose careers are, has to take the backseat. Do you think that women get adequate support from society to reach their leadership goal?
Absolutely not. They don't get it. Mm-hmm. They don't get adequate support. They don't get adequate empathy also. So if she is going after her own ambition, then there will be, in fact, almost a resentment mm-hmm. amongst those who think that she is not doing justice to her role as a mother or a spouse or a caregiver at home. So she does not just not get supported, she actually gets pulled down in the environment. So it's fair, while we like to say that the professional is professional and the personal is personal, the fact is we as individuals are having to, manage both. Professional and personal kind of gets blended even more so for a woman, because she is coming to work with a lot to do at home, mm-hmm. with a spouse that doesn't understand and is showing up in his own workspace, carrying his own chauvinism and his own bias. Mm-hmm. So unless we, according to me, you can bring all the policies at work, you can put all the reservations in place, you can give her seats on the tables. But till we as individuals do not fix our homes, we will not have liberated, fully functioning women being able to own their spaces in leadership positions. My favorite analogy is that, we try to revolutionize, our societies. We like to make big changes. Women should do X, Y, and Z. It's tough. It's a lot. But we don't even look at revolutionizing our homes. Mm-hmm. If we all look into our homes, the biases that we are carrying from the generational learnings that we have brought into our kitchens and our dining rooms and our bedrooms, we'd realize there's so much to fix there. And if you fix your dining table conversations, and if you fix what's happening, in the homes, the benefits will be going at work. So society has to do better by a woman. But who is society then, Gaurav? Mm-hmm. It is the mother and the father. So I feel, there are many layers to these conversations. We as women have to do better at work. We need society to help us. But we also are mothers to our children, our spouses to our spouses. We have to bring back our grievances, our disappointments with our ecosystem and our learnings and share it at home. Because the home has to get sensitized before our offices start to support us.
Absolutely, Nangma. Eventually, it is all about the conversations that we have at our own homes. It's as much about how we are raising the boys as about how we are raising the girls, because it is about establishing the notion of equality right at the home, which is then carried forward to the workplaces. Thank you so much, Nagma, for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us to share your deep insights and perspective.
Thank you, Gaurav. It was a lovely conversation, and I hope we all have more of these so that we can, for once, at one time, discuss how we overcame some of these biases that were not going away.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.